So we come together as community to practice, to cultivate the heart, meditation is something that we do often by ourselves, but it's a particular blessing to be able to practice with friends, with other people. So to see so many people here tonight, so many of you here, coming together to practice, is a really joyful thing. I don't have to remind anyone about the state of the world and why this is so incredibly important that we do this. The Buddha said, cultivate the wholesome, refrain from the unwholesome, and purify the mind. This is the teaching of all the Buddhas. So it's actually quite simple what this thing we call meditation is. It's a cultivating of the wholesome, developing habits of mind and heart that are useful, skillful, leading to happiness, leading to peace. Of course, it doesn't always feel that way. But this is where this goes. And there are many forms of meditation practice. Sometimes it feels like an infinity of forms of meditation practice. In the Southeast Asian Theravada school of Buddhism, even within one country, like Burma, where I spend much of my time, there are many different styles of practice, many different ways of cultivating the wholesome. Some people pay attention to the breath at the nostrils. Some people pay attention to the breath at the abdomen. Some people cultivate focus on light. Some people bend and straighten their arm for an hour at a time. And there's so many different ways of practicing. And they all go to the same end, which is so wonderful. That's the end of, that is happiness, peace of mind, freedom from suffering. And what form the practice takes, what form we personally resonate with, depends on so many things, and it's a moving target. Sometimes it's one, sometimes it's another. But there are two basic strands of the practice. One is the wisdom strand, the other is the concentration strand. So when, for example, we do vipassana practice, basic mindfulness practice, we're cultivating insight. We're cultivating wisdom. We pay attention moment to moment to moment with mindfulness to whatever is arising, with the intention of seeing clearly, of understanding the truth of the way things are, moment to moment to moment. We do this with the intention to see beneath our relatively shallow perceptions that are based on ego. To pierce through delusion, these lenses through which we see everything, these lenses of me, of mine, of solidity and continuity. And this kind of practice can go really, really deeply. And so that we see the mind, that we see the body, not as a solid, enduring entity that we own, but just as empty phenomena, flowing, moving. No single moment the same as any other. And when we see this clearly, the mind just lets go. You can't help it. It's like, oh, who is here doing this? So when we see through this lens of wisdom, when we cultivate this a wisdom practice based in mindfulness, the intention is to see as clearly as we can each moment of experience, seeing things as they really are, rather than as our ego perceptions would have them to be. So this is the vipassana strand, the insight form of the practice. The concentration form of the practice. This is where, instead of paying attention in order to understand, we pay attention to a fixed object, and we keep bringing the mind back again and again and again and again to this single point, this single place. And we rest the mind there. We connect and sustain that connection with this object. So metta practice is a concentration practice. We just keep bringing the mind back. Well, happy, peaceful. Well, happy, peaceful. Well, happy, peaceful. No matter what else is going on, we just pin the mind to that place. Again and again and again and again. And this feels very different from vipassana. Because when we're doing vipassana, we just open to experience, open to whatever presents itself, and know that just as it is. So the mind is not necessarily staying in one place. It's just knowing, oh, there's the breath rising. There's a thought. There's a sound. There's a sensation. There's the falling movement of the breath. over and over and over, we just allow the mind to take in and receive whatever happens to be predominant in the moment. It's a very nimble practice. Whereas when we do a concentration practice, it's much more fixed. And we're cultivating a steadiness of mind in one place. And we're cultivating the habit that allows us to do this at whenever we want. The more we can do it, the more we're able to just calmly say to ourselves, oh, now I'm going to do metta, and the mind obediently goes there. Metta bhavana, the cultivation of loving kindness, is only one kind of concentration practice. There are many, many, many. In the Visuddhimagga, which is an old text which describes the development of the practice in great detail, there are 40 different kinds of meditation practices that are described. Metta, cultivating loving kindness, is only one of those. So you can focus on light, you can focus on sound, you can focus on sensation, you can focus on metta. There are many, many things you can focus on. The benefit of doing this metta practice, though, it's unique amongst all the other concentration practices in that you are actually at the same time cultivating this attitude of well-wishing, this wish for the welfare and benefit of living beings. So not only do you develop concentration, but you develop kindness at the same time. So these are two different forms of meditation practice. And the thing to understand about both of them is that they're not separate. They're very different. But you can't successfully do vipassana practice without an attitude of metta. And you can't successfully do metta practice without mindfulness. You may have noticed when I was offering the guided meditation how often I used the word connect. Connect, connect, connect. Connect with yourself. Connect with this other person. Connect with all of us in the room. Connect with the phrase and the meaning of the phrase. That word connect is a shorthand for be mindful. Know what you're saying and for whom you are saying it. So we exercise our ability to be mindful in the metta practice, more or less in the background. But when we do the metta practice, we can't help but be mindful. So the wonderful thing about both of these practices is we don't do them in isolation from each other. Nor should we try. It's easy to say, you know, to pigeonhole, we say in English, to put one over here and one over there, and now I'm only doing vipassana, and now I'm only doing metta. But that's an artificial dichotomy that does not, in experience, exist. And each is a profound support for the other. Vipassana, when you try to do it without having an attitude of kindness. First of all, it's dry. There's no heart there. And secondly, you absolutely must have this attitude of interest, of friendliness, of real curiosity about whatever arises in your experience. And this deep attitude of care. Caring moment to moment to moment with what, with and about this, just this, here and now, whatever is arising, whether we like it or not, whether we understand it or not, whether we want it to be there or not. That attitude of friendliness embraces the present moment, no matter what. Oh, there's that obsessive thought about next week. And it doesn't push it away. It just knows, oh, thinking is arising. Thinking feels like this. Or strong emotion, anger, fear, jealousy, envy, self-judgment, self-doubt, bliss, whatever it is. Oh, anger. Anger feels like this. There is an embrace of that entire experience. And when we can approach our vipassana practice like this, so that no one mind state or experience is any more important or desirable than any other, with this real tender interest, that's when the practice really begins to blossom. And we can even embrace the fact that we can't embrace things sometimes. It's like, oh, there's this and I really don't like it. Oh, not liking feels like this. Okay? We can know whatever is there because we are receptive to it. We can acknowledge it. We're not pushing it away as being somehow not dharmic. This is a really easy trap to fall into. Oh, good meditators don't feel that. And it can be exceedingly subtle. So that we say to ourselves, oh, there's fear there. Okay, well, I'm okay with that. And we keep paying attention to something else, whatever it is that might be causing the fear to arise. Discounting the importance of that. It can be so subtle how we push things away. But when we have that attitude of metta, it's like, oh, fear. Oh, well, let me look at that. What is this experience of fear? Or anger, or whatever it is. So with this attitude of metta, we accept and are open to whatever is present, right here, right now. And when we can accept the truth of the way things are right now, we can see the truth of the way things are right now. I mean, that sounds really stupid when I say it like that. But we want to see the truth of the way things are, really. That's the whole point of the Vipassana practice. And if we're in denial, or if there's any aversion about something, we can't see the truth of that. So this metta attitude is absolutely essential for the Vipassana practice. And we need to bring that skill in. The flip side of the coin, the metta practice, it seems so simple. We just focus over and over and over again, using the phrase, connecting with the meaning. And as we do that, often what happens if there isn't enough mindfulness? Oh, it's like throwing rocks on the ground. It gets very mechanical. Or it turns into a mantra. Or it just turns into a rhythm. And it's kind of going in the background. But it's not alive. So we absolutely need the mindfulness. We need to slow it down. We need to pause and connect. Oh, what am I cultivating here? Well, health, yeah, okay. Happy. What's happiness? Oh, yeah, okay, happy. Really connecting with what we're wishing. With mindfulness. Together, these two wonderful practices are like two horses pulling a wagon together. They pull evenly. And when you have both going together at the same pace, you can go a lot more smoothly and quickly to your destination. And then the tenderness that comes with metta. Really brings a lightness to the Vipassana. And the clarity and presence that comes with the mindfulness is what allows the metta to really connect. So, together, each lifts the other up. So we have this Vipassana practice, we have concentration practice. And with both, it's really, really, really important to understand that in both cases, we can't force or create or construct the goal we wish to attain. We can't sit down on our cushions and say, okay, I'm going to be mindful every moment. Or I'm going to stay with the metta phrase every moment. I'm going to really make the metta arise. No. We can't do that. That's the work of ego, and it never works. What gets in the way of Vipassana practice is trying to be mindful. What gets in the way of the metta practice is trying to be really focused on the metta phrase and making the metta arise. Both of these practices require surrender and relaxation. just be and know that. That's enough for the Vipassana practice. Just repeat the phrase and connect as well as you can with that. It's enough for the metta practice. You don't have to make metta arise. You can't. You don't have to make wisdom arise in the Vipassana practice. You can't. In both cases, what we are doing in the practice is creating the conditions for either wisdom or loving kindness to arise by themselves. And what that takes is continuity. Simple, patient persistence to keep coming back to the present moment, to keep saying the phrase over and over and over again. When we have this continuity, the feedback loops that start either with mindfulness and wisdom and with metta, positive feedback loops are really important in the practice. The more we are mindful, the more we can be mindful. The more we repeat the metta phrase, the more open the heart gets, the more we connect with it. The more we connect with it, the more we can connect with it. And it just builds up momentum, both of these. So continuity is really, really important. And understanding that here in this situation where we're doing formal sitting or formal walking, the continuity looks like one thing. In our life, that continuity is just as important, but it looks really different. The trick, the secret of the practice that makes for onward leading practice, no matter what, is that continuity that is a kind of presence that we cultivate here. It's like going to the gym, and then we go out in our lives, and it's no different. So presence is what we're cultivating here in the Vipassana practice. And presence is what we need out there in life. What's the difference? The mind that knows something here is the same mind that knows something out there. When we cultivate metta practice here, metta here is the same as metta out there. And of course, yeah, sure, conditions are really different. But practice on our cushion and practice in our daily life, these are essentially the same activity. It's much more complicated out there. It's much faster. But people often say, how do I take what I have here and take it out there? Well, you can't duplicate these conditions out there, but you can duplicate an attitude of kindness, a devotion to presence, a curiosity that wants to understand whatever it sees, and a patience that, well, this is the way it is right now. Now what? That can absorb the vicissitudes of life and take everything on, no matter what, as practice. That's our task in this life. That's why we come here, to lift weights, so to speak. So I really wish you, with heartfelt well-wishing, I wish you success in this endeavor, because the world needs people that are present. The world needs people that are kind. More and more and more. It's crazy out there. And it's up to each of us to learn how to be with that and to respond with presence and kindness and skill. Because we can't stop the craziness in the world out there. But with this presence and kindness and the development of that, we can stop it in here. And that's the whole reason we practice. And when we stop that craziness in here, the benefit to ourselves and to people around us is incalculable. We can't calculate that. So, thank you very much for your practice. Thank you very much for your kind attention. It's 9:00, so it's time for me to stop. Ankh, do you have anything you need to say?